Hello, and welcome to Mystery Road. My name is Taylor.
And my name is Donovan. Mystery Road is a monthly podcast that examines the dark, strange, and unknown.
Want more updates on the show? Follow us on Instagram at Mystery Road Pod. Have suggestions and ideas for future shows? Email us at mysterieroadpod@gmail.com.
Help support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/mysteryroadpod. Now, let's take a stroll down Mystery Road. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another thrilling episode of Mystery Road. I'm Donovan, your guide through the shadows of the past, and with me today, as always, is the mysterious Taylor.
Greetings, fellow travelers of the unknown. Today we embark on a haunting journey through time to revisit one of history's darkest puzzles, the ominous legend of Jack the Ripper.
The mere mention of Jack the Ripper conjures images of fog-draped streets and a relentless, faceless killer stalking the alleys of Victorian London. Let's begin our expedition by setting the stage. Taylor, when did this chilling reign of terror actually take place?
It was a grim period, spanning from August to November of 1888 in a poverty-stricken Whitechapel district of London. During this time, a series of heinous murders took place, all women, all prostitutes, all ending in a brutal manner. It should be noted that during the 1880s, prostitution was legal in London as long as it wasn't a public nuisance. The killer left a gruesome signature, disemboweling and mutilating his victims, leaving the community in sheer panic.
This was truly a nightmarish ordeal for those living in Whitechapel. Many Ripperologists, individuals who investigate Jack the Ripper, believe the 135-year-old unsolved murders give notoriety and infamy to a case that still today is discussed in length. With some theories being plausible, to others being utterly baffling that seem impossible. Some speculate that Jack the Ripper might have been a doctor or surgeon due to the surgical precision displayed in some of the murders.
Jack the Ripper's true identity remains unknown to this day. Despite extensive investigations, numerous theories, and suspects, the case has never officially been solved, and the killer was never caught. The police and investigators at the time faced many challenges in their pursuit of the elusive killer, including a lack of modern forensic techniques, sparse record keeping, and the type of woman he targeted.
True. And the enduring puzzle of Jack the Ripper has ignited the imaginations of countless of authors, filmmakers, and television producers. It's become an integral part of pop culture, with adaptations and retellings galore. Though it's not just the professionals. Amateur detectives and historians have also delved into this conundrum, each bringing their own unique perspective to the case.
Jack the Ripper quickly became a media sensation, with newspapers reporting extensively on the gruesome murders and publishing letters allegedly written by the killer himself. One of the letters was signed Jack the Ripper, oddly having the killer provide himself his own infamous nickname. The letter was received by the Central News Agency and added to the mystique surrounding the case. It's widely believed that some of the letters have poor authenticity, making the police's investigative efforts more difficult. The canonical Ripper victims, whose murders are attributed to the same perpetrator, are generally considered to be Mary Ann Nichols, Annie Chapman, Elizabeth Stride, Catherine Eddowes, and Mary Jane Kelly. These murders were particularly brutal, with the victims often having their throats slashed and their bodies mutilated in horrific ways.
Mary Ann Nichols, known to her friends as Polly, was born on August 26, 1845 in London. She lived a difficult life, marked by poverty and hardship, which was unfortunately all too common for the East End of London during that era. Polly was married to a man by the name of William Nichols, and the two bore five children together. She worked as a domestic servant, but struggled with alcoholism, a problem that plagued the lives of the destitute in Victorian London. Due to her abuse of alcohol, William eventually divorced her and took the children. This led her to move to the east side of London, to a neighborhood referred to as Whitechapel, where she made her living by providing prostitution services to working class men. On the dark, eerie night of August 31st, 1888, Polly became Jack the Ripper's first victim. She was last seen alive by her friend Emily Holland shortly after 2:30 a.m. Polly boasted to Emily that she had made her lodging money 3 times over that night, but had spent it all on alcohol. Emily indicated to police and reporters, Polly told her, quote, "It won't be long before I come back," end quote. Sadly, Polly's body was discovered later that morning, but before dawn, in the district's Buck Row, a small, narrow street of warehouses just behind the Whitechapel Underground Station. Polly's body was found lying in front of the stable yard gates by Charles Cross and Robert Paul, who initially suspected she was passed out drunk. The two decided to continue onwards to work, agreeing to tell the first police official they encountered. At around 3:30 a.m., Police Constable John Neal stumbled upon Polly's body through the light emitted from his lantern. He quickly noted that she had 2 deep slices to her throat. Her body was quickly moved and examined by the coroner, who reported she had been brutally slashed to her vertebrae, almost decapitating her. She had suffered 6 severe abdominal mutilations and a cut to her tongue and bruises to her face.
Polly's murder marked the beginning of the infamous Whitechapel murders, a series of gruesome killings that would continue over the next few months and would undoubtedly shock the world. The brutality of her death sent shockwaves through London, leading to increased fear and anxiety among the residents of Whitechapel. The investigation into her murder proved to be one of the most challenging and baffling cases in the history of criminal investigations. Let's take a step back before Polly's demise to what some believe is Jack the Ripper's first victim. Though the lack of evidence and knowledge of serial killer profiles at the time make it difficult to say she was in fact his first victim. Her name was Martha Tabram. She too was a prostitute with alcohol abuse problems. Martha was found on August 7th with 39 stab wounds. Unlike Polly, Martha was not disemboweled, nor was her throat cut with the signature Ripper slice. Many believe Martha may have been the victim of a different perpetrator, especially since murder was not an uncommon event during this time period. East London had witnessed more than 3,000 murders around the time Jack the Ripper was thought to be active, though only 5 of those murders have been connected to him.
Jack the Ripper's second victim was born Annie Eliza Smith on September 25, 1841 in London. Annie's life unfolded against the backdrop of the Victorian era, a time marked by stark social inequality and economic challenges. She hailed from a working-class family, and her early years were characterized by the hardships that many in her social stratum faced. In her youth, Annie married a man by the name of John Chapman, a coachman, and together they had 3 children. Unfortunately, their marital bliss did not endure, and the couple eventually separated. This separation left Annie in a vulnerable position, struggling to support herself and her children amidst a lack of financial resources. As the years passed, Annie Chapman's life took a turn for the worse. She succumbed to alcoholism to help numb the pain of what could have been. Her addiction led to a precarious existence, and she found herself frequently homeless, moving in and out of workhouses and dollhouses as a prostitute.
By the late 1870s, Annie's life had become a desperate struggle for survival. She lived a transient existence in the Whitechapel district, where she encountered numerous challenges and found herself in dire circumstances. Tragically, on the morning of September 8, 1888, Annie became the second victim of Jack the Ripper. Her life was cut short in a brutal and gruesome manner. Her body was discovered in the backyard of 29 Hanbury Street, Whitechapel, with her throat slashed and her body mutilated. Annie was last seen by Elizabeth Long on her way to work that morning, 30 minutes before her body was found, speaking with a well-dressed, good-looking man. Elizabeth overheard a portion of their conversation, with the man asking, "Will you?" and Annie replying, "Yes."
Annie's body was found by local resident John Davis at around 6 a.m. that morning. She was found lying near the back door with her head parallel to the fence and 2 deep cuts to her throat going all the way around her neck. The killer then sliced Annie from her groin to her breastbone, draping her flesh and belly over one shoulder and her intestines over the other. The police quickly moved Annie's body from the scene to the coroner's office in an attempt to save evidence and keep the public from seeing the brutality of what had occurred. The police then cleaned up the crime scene in a further effort to keep the crime from the public. unlike today's police practices, cleaning the crime scene was not looked at as destruction of evidence because the forensics, including blood samples, fingerprinting, and gathering other sorts of potential DNA evidence, had not yet been developed.
The coroner performed an autopsy of Annie's body, which revealed parts of her reproductive organs were extracted. The perpetrator had also been careful when slicing her throat as to not have blood spray on him, Annie, or the surrounding areas of the scene. This became a key indicator of linking Jack the Ripper's murders to one another. Jack the Ripper was also careful to not leave footprints or handprints at the scene, creating further difficulty for the police to investigate. Annie's murder marked a pivotal moment in the wave of terror that would come to be associated with Jack the Ripper. The police knew that prostitutes were often hurt and killed in their dangerous line of work, but what Jack the Ripper did was far more brutal and sinister than what had become normal. The coroner noted in his report Jack the Ripper did not perform sexual acts on his victims. This led police and investigators to believe Jack the Ripper obtained sexual gratification from killing his victims and disemboweling their bodies, making him a pequerist.
After the murder of Annie, a group of prominent local citizens and tradesmen came together to create the Vigilance Committee. These citizens would help the police by patrolling the streets of Whitechapel looking for Jack the Ripper. As the murders continued, they petitioned and lobbied Parliament for additional funds and resources to protect the females of Whitechapel in a hope to catch and identify Jack the Ripper. Fear had grown so large in the community that any foreigner or man with odd-looking clothing would be accused as Jack the Ripper. Those individuals would be chased down the streets and pelted to death with stones by panicked mobs. Crowds would angrily chant through the town that individual was Jack the Ripper. On September 27, 1888, Jack the Ripper sent the Central News Agency of London a letter written in blood, mocking the police and threatening more murders. Unlike most serial killers, the perpetrator coined his own infamous nickname by signing the letter as Jack the Ripper.
Jack the Ripper's third victim was born Elizabeth Gustafsdotter on November 27, 1843, in Torslanda, Sweden. Elizabeth's journey through life took her from her Scandinavian homeland to the bustling streets of London during the late 19th century. Elizabeth's early years were marked by troubles of a single woman's working class life. She eventually married a ship carpenter, John Thomas Stride, and the couple lived in Sweden before relocating to London. However, John's life came to an end shortly into their marriage. Elizabeth decided, out of the respect for her late husband, she would keep the name Stride, which she would be known by for the rest of her life. Like many single and widowed women of her time, Elizabeth's life was not without its share of struggles. She faced economic challenges and spent time in workhouses and shelters to make ends meet. Despite her hardships, Elizabeth maintained a sense of independence and self-reliance. She earned a modest income by working as a domestic servant and occasionally seeking employment as a prostitute.
Tragically, in the early morning of September 30th, 1888, Elizabeth's life was abruptly and brutally ended. Her body was discovered on Burner Street in the Whitechapel district at roughly 1 a.m. by market trader Louis Dimeschutz. Luis's pony came to an abrupt stop, causing him to step out of his carriage and strike a match. He leaned over in the pitch dark and was able to make out a dismembered female body in the road directly in front of his horse. Unlike the other victims, her throat had been slashed, but her body had not been mutilated, leading to speculation that the killer may have been interrupted during the attack. Elizabeth's murder marked the third murder in the series of killings that terrorized London and the world. Jack the Ripper didn't achieve the sexual gratification he was seeking and would quickly find his next victim.
The next unsuspecting victim was born Catherine Eddowes on April 14, 1842, in Graisley Green, Wolverhampton. Catherine, like the other victims, came from a working-class background and suffered from alcohol abuse. Catherine lived with her husband, Francis Spurzheim Craig, in Whitechapel. By the late 1880s, Catherine found herself residing in London's East End. She was known to have a somewhat nomadic lifestyle, moving in and out of lodging houses and often living on the edge of destitution. In order to support herself, Catherine occasionally resorted to casual labor and at times engaged in prostitution. despite her difficult circumstances, she was known to be a warm and affable person by those who knew her. Tragically, only hours after the death of Elizabeth, Catherine became the fourth victim of Jack the Ripper. Only 9 minutes after being spotted walking away with a good-looking man from a Jewish workman's club, her body was discovered in Midas Square by police constable Edward Watkins. Catherine's murder was the most brutal murder to happen so far. She was found with deliberate cuts to her face. The cuts consisted of vertical cuts across her eyelids. Her lips had cuts on them, her nose was severed, and there were upside-down V cuts into her cheeks. Her neck had been slit all the way to her spine, and her uterus and left kidney were removed. The coroner who performed the autopsy noted in his report that the killer may have had anatomical knowledge and surgical skill. He also noted that the bladder was not damaged when the kidney was removed.
It is important that we are reminded that Catherine's murder occurred in complete darkness. Many have argued the killer wouldn't have been able to see his own hand in front of his face, let alone remove organs with surgical precision without some type of medical training. Other ripperologists and investigators have rebutted the coroner's theory of the killer having medical knowledge and training. Instead, they propose the killer may be an individual with butcher skills. This revelation had a huge disruption on the investigation, even to this day, because instead of narrowing the list of suspects, it widened it. The vast majority of people at the time, especially those of lower income, were known to butcher their own livestock and prepare meals from it.
Catherine's murder was the first one to have a trophy taken from the scene. A piece of her apron was cut off and later found on the east side of Whitechapel with blood on it. The police were able to recover the piece of cloth and match it to Catherine's apron. Even today, the apron piece is considered the only piece of hard evidence connected to Jack the Ripper. Many have speculated Jack the Ripper became enraged from being disturbed, which is why he inflicted so much damage and horror to Catherine. It's horrible to imagine what she went through. Did she have a chance to save herself, or was it over in the blink of an eye? Joseph Lusk, who was the head of the Whitechapel Vigilance Committee, later received half of a human kidney weeks after the murder of Catherine with a note attached. Jack the Ripper admitted to eating the other half of what is presumably Catherine's missing kidney. Jack the Ripper further asked if Joseph could wait a little bit longer, and if he was willing to do so, he would send the knife used to cut her kidney out. Oddly, the letter had different handwriting than the letter previously sent to the Central News Agency of London.
Jack the Ripper's fifth victim was born Mary Jane Barnett, often referred to as Mary Kelly, on May 25, 1863, in Limerick, Ireland. Her life's journey led her from her Irish homeland to the grim streets of London during the late 19th century. Little is known about her family or upbringing because her life was shrouded in secrecy. In London, Mary lived with a man by the name of Joseph Barnett for a short time before her murder. Most of the information known about her comes from Joseph, although his stories about Mary are conflicting, leaving ripperologists to believe many are exaggerated. She lived a transient lifestyle, frequently moving between lodging houses and often finding herself on the brink of homelessness. To make ends meet, she engaged in prostitution, a perilous occupation. On the morning of November 9th, 1888, Mary became the last known and most gruesomely murdered victim of Jack the Ripper. She was last seen by George Hatcherson, who saw her with a well-dressed man. Curious, George went up to Mary and talked to her briefly before she linked arms and left with the unknown man. He then followed the two for a short time until they left down an alleyway, being the last person to see Mary alive.
Her life was brutally and horrifically ended when she was discovered in her squalid room at 13 Miller's Court off Dorset Street. At around 10:45 a.m. the next morning, the rent collector for the building found her body dismembered, separated across the room, and blood lining the walls. The extent of the mutilation and violence inflicted upon her body was beyond description, marking a gruesome conclusion to the Ripper's reign of terror. It was believed that Jack the Ripper had extensive time to perform his sadistic deeds with Mary. He focused on her abdomen as usual. However, he attacked her face, removing her nose and her eyebrows, leading experts to believe this attack was a personal statement. Her neck was severed, leaving knife marks in her vertebrae. He then pulled the flesh of her neck down to her knees, exposing her ribs and thigh bones. He carefully and precisely extracted all of her organs, except for her lungs. Upon further investigation, the police found her organs spread across the bed, bedside table, and under her head. However, her heart was missing, most likely taken as a sick trophy of dominance. Mary's murder was a chilling and tragic ending to the series of killings that had terrorized London and the world, besides one copycat killing that occurred the following year.
All five victims' deaths left an indelible mark on history, contributing to the enduring mystery surrounding Jack the Ripper's identity. Beyond the horrifying circumstances of their demise, their lives serve as a poignant reminder of the challenges faced by many in the impoverished neighborhoods of Victorian London. Their stories illuminate the stark realities of the time: poverty, social inequality, and the fragile existence of those living on the fringe of society. While history has primarily remembered them as victims of one of history's most infamous serial killers, it is essential to recognize them as human beings who endured a challenging life with resilience, overcoming obstacles at all costs. The police at this time had few clues. However, a list of suspects was starting to come together. Police further believed the murders only stopped because Jack the Ripper either died, was locked up in prison for an unrelated crime, institutionalized, or became physically incapable of committing future murders.
The Police Illustrated newspaper became controversial because the editors would have sketch artists go to the crime scene locations to sketch out what the crime scenes looked like, including anatomically correct sketches of disemboweled and dismembered victims. Many attribute Jack the Ripper not being caught or identified to him knowing the area well, holding himself in a manner that did not bring suspicion, and of course, the lack of technological advances in forensics. Furthermore, the killings only covered 1 square mile of east side of London, which could have thrown police and investigators off on where he truly resided. Although there have been several suspects over the years, Ripperologists agree that the three main suspects associated with Jack the Ripper killings are Montague John Druitt, Carl Feinbaum, and Aaron Kosminski.
Montague was the son of a prominent physician, graduated from Oxford University, and was well-liked in the community. Sadly, his body was found approximately 1 month after the final and most vicious attack. Investigators noted his body was at the bottom of a lake for several weeks, with stones found in his pockets to keep him from floating. His death was ultimately determined to be a suicide, leading many Ripperologists to suspect he could be Jack the Ripper. Carl Feinbaum was a German merchant sailor who worked the docks of Whitechapel, known to locals as a psychopath and woman mutilator. His own lawyer claimed Carl was in fact the infamous Jack the Ripper. Through the years, Ripperologists have been able to confirm he was in Whitechapel for each and every date the killings occurred, and could often be found at nearby brothels enjoying himself. In 1890, just 2 years after the final slaying, Carl migrated to America and killed Juliana Hoffman, which he would be found guilty for. Carl was sentenced and ultimately put to death by the use of the electric chair. Many people believe the way he murdered Juliana was similar to the killings of Jack the Ripper.
Aaron Kosminski is often referred to as the most likely suspect associated with the Jack the Ripper murders. Many Ripperologists believe he is in fact the true identity of Jack the Ripper. Aaron was a Polish barber who moved to London in the early 1880s. He supposedly exhibited a huge disdain for women and was sent to an asylum in 1889, where he would die shortly after being admitted. Police at the time had been given the name Kosminski as a possible suspect, but it wouldn't be until decades later Aaron would make it to their radar. On September 7, 2014, Jari Luhelian, an expert in historic DNA analysis, tested mitochondrial DNA from the apron of Catherine Eddowes that matched female descendants of Aaron's sister, matching 99.2% on the first test and 100% on the second test.
The story of Jack the Ripper became such a huge public interest, it quickly spread to American news outlets. At the time, people were paying money to see the bodies of the victims in the windows where they were murdered. Even to this day, true crime enthusiasts and tourists of London pay for tours to see where the crimes of Jack the Ripper took place, in hopes of uncovering some type of evidence that others have overlooked. Jack the Ripper has left a dark stain on popular culture, inspiring countless of books, films, and television TV shows. The case continues to captivate the public's imagination. Amateur sleuths and researchers around the world continue to investigate and speculate about the true identity of the elusive killer.
That's it for this episode. Thank you all very much for taking the time to listen to our podcast. Next month, we will finally fulfill our promise and will travel to Martin, Ohio to investigate the Halloween massacre of the Lisk family. If you like our content, please like, share, and subscribe. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Mystery Road Pod and also follow us on Facebook at Mystery Road. Consider donating to patreon.com/Mystery Road Pod to help support the show. Links will be in the show notes.